From Foreign Policy, I'm Sarah Wildman, and this is First Person. This week, one journalist's quest to hold accountable those responsible for Argentina's biggest terrorist attack. Years ago, on July 18, 1994, a car bomb blew up the Jewish community center of Buenos Aires, known by its Spanish initials, AMIA, just before 10 in the morning. 85 people were killed that day, including children. Hundreds more were injured. No one has ever been convicted of that crime. Most officials believe the terrorist attack originated with Hezbollah, backed by Iran. Iran has denied the accusation. In 2015, an Argentine special prosecutor named Alberto Nisman went on live television. He not only pointed a finger at Iran that day, but also accused then-president of Argentina, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, of burying the links to Iran in order to preserve a budding close relationship between the two countries. Nisman was found dead just days later.
His body was found with a single gunshot wound to the head. It was less than 24 hours before he was due to testify before a congressional hearing on his allegations that President Cristina Kirchner had obstructed justice over the country's worst terror attack.
But protesters aren't... One of the first people to report the death of Nisman was the Israeli-Argentine journalist Damien Pachter. Pachter was then working at the Buenos Aires Herald, a large English-language newspaper which has since folded. He was often assigned stories related to the AMIA bombing and the subsequent investigations. When we talked, I asked about the night he learned Nisman was dead. So he's found dead in his apartment. The door is locked. There's a gun next to him that he had borrowed from a friend with some sort of almost casual sounding description of wanting to protect himself. And you tweeted something. What did you tweet and how did you know to tweet it?
During the time that Nisman was found dead, I received a tip from a source mentioning that Nisman was dead over a pool of blood in his bathroom in his apartment. I received that information around 11 p.m.
And who did you receive the information from, or can you not tell us?
Oh, I can say it's my source.
So you received this information, and you tweeted out that he had been found dead.
Yeah, I first tweeted that I'm being informed about an incident in Prosecutor Nisman's house. So the reason for tweeting that, even though I already knew he was dead, was because I wanted to gain some time with my source and ask more questions and have no even one doubt that the information that I was receiving was true. So I rechecked my source for another 30 minutes. And that's when I tweet the second tweet saying that Prosecutor Alberto Nisman was found dead over a pool of blood in the bathroom of his apartment, and the medics are working there. He's not breathing, which was like a clue to say that he was killed, but I couldn't say it because I was not at the place. And that's where the snowball began to roll on.
So tell us more about the snowball. What ends up happening after that? You tweet this, and instead it somehow runs up against what the official statement is, which is that it's supposed to have been a suicide.
So, yes, as soon as I tweet and other colleagues began to arrive to the crime scene, I immediately noticed an effort by the government to impose a suicide hypothesis, which was something totally illogical because there was not even an investigation that started. But you had to just read the newspapers the day after. And all the newspapers that were in line with the government pushed for the suicide hypothesis. Now, let's go back a little bit. We're speaking about the prosecutor who was working for over a decade about one thing and one thing only, the Iranian responsibility for the 1994 attack. He feels an indictment against the current president of Argentina at that time, Cristina Kirchner, and 4 days later, he's found dead with a gunshot wound in his head 12 hours before he's supposed to brief the Congress with the most substantial proofs that he had. That's the entire picture. All the rest, it's, for me, is secondary. That's the thing. So The way that the public became aware about what happened was through social media. And you have, on one side, people who believe that he was murdered for his work. And on the other hand, you had the government trying to impose a suicide hypothesis. So the way that the information became public, I think, had a very unexpected impact by the government, which eventually was the dismissal of the suicide hypothesis. I mean, the government could keep on going and trying to impose that hypothesis, but in the practical level, it just wouldn't be enough for the people to believe in that. There was no way.
What happens in the next hours for you after you tweet this out?
I was worried, not because I feared that something could happen to me, but the atmosphere was of fear, because people believed that the government ordered to kill Nisman. So it showed you how far the government would go in order to protect their interests. However, I remember myself saying, it's still too early to know the ramifications of that. And I wasn't aware, of course, that it's going to have personal ramifications for me.
You said there's an atmosphere of fear. Did somebody get in touch with you and say that you yourself should be afraid specifically?
Not during the first 24, 48 hours. 3 days later, I kept on going and keep continuing with my routine. I went to work. However, I changed a little bit my routine. For example, I began to speak with my mother in Hebrew because I fear I would be wired up. And I started to move with public transportation. I had a car, but I didn't use it because I just took some security measures. I wasn't afraid, but I was kind of on alert mode. Let's put it that way.
Did you live alone or did you live with someone at the time?
I live alone. I live in my apartment. I had an apartment which I owned, and my mother was living in the neighborhood. I only have a mother living now.
So was your mother concerned?
Yes, of course. We're speaking about a Jewish mother, which, of course, she was worried, but she was also confident that I would be smart enough to take care of myself.
But so you continue to go about your time. You take public transportation. You take some precautions. What prompts you to change course altogether and leave Buenos Aires?
I was in the newsroom in the Buenos Aires Herald when I received a message from a source that said, come and visit me. Now, I didn't understand why he was writing that to me, because I'm in the middle of this mess, why he would like me to go and visit him. My source live outside the city of Buenos Aires, so if I would eventually go and meet him, it implicates that I'm going to have to leave the city in the middle of this mess. And I received the same message for a few days, and then I kind of got enlightened, you can say it that way, and I understood that what he actually was saying was something else. And we had a very short conversation where he mentioned that it would be better if I go and meet him. And I went home. I met my mother there. I took clothes for 3 days, which was my original plan. And right before leaving my apartment, I said, just in case, I'm going to take with me my Israeli passport and my Israeli ID. And I took a bus and I went to meet my source outside the city. Now, I arrived very, very early, so I had to make time. So I was walking around that place where I was and looking for a hotel to spend a few days. And eventually, at one point, I got myself into a coffee inside a gas station. And I remember sitting with my face upon the door, upon the entrance of the place, in order to see who was coming in. And eventually, a very strange person came. His presence alerted me in some kind of way. And he sat up in a table on my left. And for at least 1 or 2 hours, he didn't order anything. So that caught my attention. Eventually, my source called and he asked me where I was. Nobody, even my mother, nobody knew where I was specifically, but this guy knew. And then I received this phone call from my source asking me specifically where I was. And he told me, okay, stay there, don't move. I'll be there in 20 minutes. Now, my source is a smart guy. So he entered from the back door of the place. And while I was speaking with my source in the phone, the suspicious guy that was sitting next to me switched places and sat on my back, like closer to me. And my source, when he came in, he realized that he saw this guy writing stuff on a small notepad. And he came to me and he told me, don't look back. You have an intelligence officer behind your back. Smile to the camera and stay calm. And I posed like for a picture. My source sat in front of me. And we took a picture of the guy, of the person who was eventually an intelligence officer. Now, this intel officer realized that we took a picture, kind of like we burned him. And he automatically, he stood up and left the place. And once he left, I spoke with my source and I asked him why this person is following me. And there were no needing words to understand what was going on. So I immediately told myself, okay, that's it. I'm gone from here. I'm going to Israel. That's how I eventually got the decision. It took me like seconds. I understood that there was no reason for me to stand there. I was in danger. I confirmed the identity of this intelligence officer through my source. I mean, how my source knew that the person who was next to me was an intelligence officer is simple, because he knew him.
So then you decide to leave, but how did you do that? Did you go to a travel agency and buy yourself a ticket?
Well, I only had 100 bucks on my pocket, so I had to find a way to have enough money to buy a ticket without rising up alerts in the government, and try to be as smooth as I can without cutting too much attention. Of course, I couldn't use my credit card, so what I did was, through a friend, I did a money transfer from the city of Buenos Aires in the black market to the place where I was. And I received the money there and I just bought a ticket several hours after that. And I bought a ticket from Buenos Aires to Montevideo, Uruguay, from Uruguay to Madrid, and from Madrid to Tel Aviv. I left the place where I was with my source and I went to the airport. Meanwhile, another source sent a message to my mother to meet me there at 2:30 a.m.
You mean to have your mother meet you at the Buenos Aires airport?
Exactly. She met me there for like 10 minutes. We had a very brief and, let's say, logistic talk. And then another two friends of mine came and just interviewed me in order to have a proof that I was leaving the country. I was exiling myself from the country.
And you knew that this was not going to be brief. You were going to be gone for some time, maybe forever.
Right. The quote to my mother was, I'm not going back with this government in office. And then she said, it's going to take at least a year and a half. And then I said, yes, of course.
Now, you get to the airport and you have a flight first to Uruguay, as you mentioned, and then on to Madrid and then on to Tel Aviv. But actually, the Casa Rosada, which is the sort of the pink house, which is what they call the house where the president lives in Argentina, they tweeted out your itinerary, didn't they?
Yes, they did. That was kind of the... I understood it as a message to me, meaning don't come back.
When did they tweet that message out, though? Were you already gone? Were you in transit? Where were you when they tweeted that?
I was on air to Madrid at that time. And when I landed in Madrid, I opened my smartphone and I realized that I have like thousands, literally, of messages, and that the government tweeted my flight itinerary. But for me, it was like the proof that all that I experienced 24 hours before that was an actually persecution by the states trying to point me as kind of a public enemy.
Has anything like that ever happened before? I mean, why would they tweet? I mean, what was the excuse given for tweeting out your itinerary?
Their explanation for that was it was the public interest. Because remember when I told you that I was interviewed by some friends in the airport, I said that given the fact that I'm being followed and I'm fear for my life, I have to leave the country. So the counter argument for that was that there's nothing to hide. He took a plane and he's going back on February the 2nd. That's what the government's house tweet said, which was true in one point. I did buy a ticket to Uruguay and back to Buenos Aires, but I also bought a ticket to Israel. So I did that as a way to try and make them confused, which eventually happened. They thought, they were sure that we'll be going back to on February 2nd from Uruguay. So they're like, hey, he took a flight from the national airline. He's going to Uruguay and he's coming back and everything is all right. He's not in exile. He's not fearing for his life. It's all a lie. The bottom line is that they try to discredit me.
And your mother has remained living in Argentina.
Yeah, she's living in Argentina. Thank God she wasn't threatened in any kind. Of course, we should mention that during that time, the government, the Kirchner government, lost the elections and the opposition took power. So it kind of make things more easier for my situation and for my mother. But even that, I never went back to Buenos Aires since then.
You have not been back to Buenos Aires since January 2015.
No, I have no interest at all if I'm out of the intelligence blacklist. I don't have any purpose and any interest to do so.
You've created an entirely, or you've gone back to a life that you had lived part of the time in Israel to begin with.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, in the 4 years since, has anything happened with the material that Nisman found?
Well, there are two sides to this. On one hand, there's the Nisman investigation, and it's currently keep on going. The then president, Cristina Kirchner, is supposed to face trial in a few weeks, in a few months. And on the other hand, you had the Nisman's death investigation, which during the Kirchner era was on purpose stuck on the suicide hypothesis. Once the government changed and the opposition took control, the tag, the judicial tag of the case was under murder and not as suicide. So now the Argentine justice is looking for the material authors of the murder.
But until this date, no one has been brought to justice officially for the Amia bombing itself.
No, the thing is still in a kind of a limbo because Iran will never extradite his own officials. And Argentina has a legal issue as well, because according to the Argentine constitution, some say the trial in absentia is not constitutional. So in some way, there will have to be some kind of amendment in the constitution in order to carry on with the judicial measures.
What does it mean for the Jewish community that this has never been closed?
Well, the Argentine community is kind of used to that, because in 25 years the advancements in the case were very, very minor. The only person who had enough contacts and enough information to carry on was murder. So by killing Nisman, they also achieved to take out the person who was the most experienced in the case. And now the case is stuck, even that there is another government in power.
Do you feel safe in your day-to-day life now in Israel?
Yes, as far as I'm concerned, for me, Israel is the safest place in the world. And I can mention that during these almost 5 years that I'm here, I only met my mother in other countries, and one of those countries are the United States.
Was Nusman's death ultimately ruled a murder, or was it a suspicious death?
The first investigators during the Kirchner time in office, they said that he committed suicide. There was no evidence, according to them, that Nusman was murdered. 2 years after that, another board of experts took the case again and realized something completely different. The proof that now the Argentine judicial system is working with is that Nisman was murdered by another person, that he received a shot, a vaccine, kind of a vaccine with ketamine in order to reduce him and kill him with a gunshot wound in his hand.
And it has been ruled now a murder as opposed to suspicious, or is it still considered officially a suicide?
No, it's currently going for the murder direction, and they're looking for the authors.
Both of the investigations, both the original investigations into the Amia bombing and into the death of Nisman, seem to have not been carried out with, let's say, the efficiency that they might have been. Is that fair to say?
None of the investigations made by the Argentine authorities were efficient. There's no doubt in that. Because if they were actually efficient, we would have the responsibles in justice. But what we are witnessing is a cover-up over a cover-up over a cover-up for 25 years. And those who are partially responsible for the attack found their death in, let's say, mysterious ways. For example, Imad Muania, who was considered the mastermind of the attack, he was killed in Syria a few years ago. So according to the Argentine system, I don't see no efficiency there and no way to have a fruitful investigation with results and consequences that the Argentine society will be happy with.
Do you think anyone will ever be brought to justice then?
Yes, but I think it won't be the work of Argentina. And speaking about the bombings now, yes? The same way that, according to foreign reports, Israel's and the U.S. intelligence services took care of members of Hezbollah involved in the attack, I think if something would happen, it's going to happen that way and not through Argentine hands. Now, regarding to Nisman, I do think that time will eventually make things better in the sense that people will speak up eventually once they feel safe enough and that they will not be afraid for any consequence they could suffer for speaking up. But it's going to take time, but I do believe, even though at the beginning I was very pessimistic about it, eventually I feel better about the fact that it's possible and there is a hope to know the truth. Myself, I was involved here in Israel in the investigation of Nisman murder from here. I interview several members of the Mossad, former members of the Mossad, and the sense that I got from them is that Israel is aware of what happened during that night to Nisman. And I guess it's just waiting for the, let's say, a good time to speak up and to unveil whatever happened.
Damien, do you think of yourself in a way as one of the victims of the bombing then at this point, having had to reroute your life?
I see myself connected in some way to that case. I don't see myself as a victim. And the reason for that is because becoming a journalist was my own decision and I knew what I was going into. So I was well aware into what I was going into. So I feel good about it and I have no regrets of some kind and nothing.
Thank you so much for telling us your story today.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
That was Damien Pachter, an Israeli-Argentine journalist. He spoke to us from Tel Aviv, Israel, about the 25th anniversary of the Amia bombing, which is on July 18th. First Person is produced by me, Sarah Wildman, with help from Maya Gandhi and Benjamin Soloway. Our editor is Rob Sachs. Our executive editor for news and podcasts is Dan Efron. We'll be back next week with another episode. But in the meantime, check out our past shows and subscribe to our feed. Thanks for listening.